Welcome to the Liver Lounge, your go-to podcast for the latest updates in hepatology, featuring discussions with the world's leading experts.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening in to the latest episode of the podcast by the Liver Foundation. I'm Dr. Margaret Teng. I'm from the National University Health System in Singapore, and I'm really honored to have with me today Dr. Yusuke Shimakawa from the Pasteur Institute in Paris, France. Dr. Shimakawa has recently led a group to publish an article in the Lancet Gastro and Hepatology. This article is entitled "The Development and Evaluation of a Simple Treatment Eligibility Score to Decentralize Hepatitis B Care in Africa, a Cross-Sectional Study." So welcome, Dr. Shimakawa, and thanks a lot for being here today.
Thank you, Dr. Teng, for giving me opportunity to speak in this podcast. Thank you.
Okay, so I think just to kind of establish some background for our listeners who may not be very familiar with this topic, how important is this problem of viral hepatitis B in Africa, and what is the current status of uptake of Hep B treatment in Africa?
Yeah, thank you for this question. So globally, as you know, hepatitis, viral hepatitis, particularly hepatitis B, is one of the most prevalent chronic infectious disease, chronic infectious viral disease all over the world. I think approximately, according to Global Burden of Disease estimate, about 4% of the global population carry this virus. And there are a couple of regions where the prevalence is particularly higher than the average, global average. And one is Asia, Southeast Asia, but another is Sub-Saharan Africa, particularly in West Africa and Central Africa and some of countries in East and South Africa. So some of the country, the prevalence of hepatitis B in the general population can exceed 8% or even 10%. So this represents really important public health concern in these countries.
Definitely, it's a really important problem. But it's also mentioned in your article that actually the uptake of treatment is very low. So maybe you could comment on this, and also what are some of the barriers to increasing uptake of antiviral therapy in Africa?
Yes, so this is a huge problem. As you may know, WHO developed global elimination strategy in 2015, and they aim to increase the uptake of screening and treatment. So in terms of the proportion of people who know their own status for hepatitis B, they aim to increase up to 90%. And out of those people, those who are eligible for treatment, treatment uptake should be at least 80% by 2030. But I think we are far from these ambitious goals. And according to the WHO estimate, I think only I think 1 or 2% in African context who are eligible for treatment are currently on treatment. So we are still very far from these ambitious goals.
Yeah. So it seems like The study that you did kind of tries to address a bit of the gap here. So perhaps, Dr. Shimakawa, you could maybe explain to us what were some of the thoughts behind this study, like why did the group decide to do it, and what are some of the aims of the study?
Yeah, so thank you very much. So as you know, there are two different treatment indication for chronic hepatitis B infection. One is for prevention of mother-to-child transmission, and another is a treatment of chronic carrier hepatitis B in order to prevent progression of chronic liver disease. So for this paper, we focused on the second question, not for the prevention of mother-to-child transmission. And just looking at this management of chronic HBV infection, screening for hepatitis B using hepatitis B surface and antigen rapid diagnostic test. This is more or less available even in rural areas in African countries. And tenofovir, the first line antiviral therapy, is also became more available than before now. thanks to and also with the generic and also reduce the cost of generic drugs. So these entry point screening and treatment is more or less accessible. But the problem is evaluation of treatment eligibility. And as you know, in resource-rich countries like ASUR guidelines, ESUR guidelines, or APASUR guidelines, all these guidelines recommend stratifying patients' risk by using various tests, such as HBV DNA test, hepatitis B E antigen test, and ALT liver fibrosis assessment using FibroScan or liver biopsy, and so on. And the problem is that in these countries with high prevalence of hepatitis B in Africa, they have limited access to all these tests, particularly for HBV DNA tests and the FibroScan to or liver biopsy to assess stage of liver fibrosis. And WHO has made, in 2015, WHO issued their first guidelines, and they have provided treatment eligibility criteria free from liver biopsy and FibroScan. So they recommended to treat someone who have APRI, elevated APRI score, or someone who has, in the absence of liver cirrhosis, someone who has high viral load and ALT, but still this requires viral load testing. So that's why we have previously in 2018, we have published an article by developing a score free from viral load and FibroScan assessment called TREAT-B. And TREAT-B consists of ALT and hepatitis B E antigen. And we developed this score using the big cohort of chronic HBV infection in the Gambia, in West Africa, and we validated this score externally in other cohort of African people in Burkina Faso, Senegal, and also in Europe. And this score it's not perfect, but I think there was about 80% sensitivity, specificity, something like that, in order to identify someone who meets ESUR criteria, European criteria, as a reference. So we suggested that we can use this score where there is no access to viral load testing and FibroScan testing. But then also we often heard from our colleagues that hepatitis B E antigen is also not free accessible. So that's where this Hepsanet score, development of this score came in. So we say that we need to also develop a score free from, not only from HBDN and FibroScan, but also hepatitis B E antigen. And that's how we made a collaboration with Hepsanet and developed this.
Oh, that's a really interesting kind of explanation into the background of this study. I mean, I think these are all really interesting points to take away. Dr. Shimakawa, can I just ask, in regards to the study design, how was the study conducted, such as, I guess, kind of derive this Hepsanet, new Hepsanet score, and is this now validated for use in Africa?
Yeah, thank you for your question. So first, in terms of the study design, so before conducting this study, there was already an initiative taken by our colleague working in this context, particularly Asgeir Johannessen in Norway, who has been working a lot in Ethiopia. So he took initiative a couple of years ago to identify all the cohort studies of chronic HBV infection in sub-Saharan Africa and contacted all the authors of these published articles that identified through systematic review and asked them to share their data in order to evaluate what is the appropriate cutoff level for APRI and also FIB4 in order to diagnose significant fibrosis and liver cirrhosis. And so this is a first attempt, through this Hepsanet group And the paper has been successfully published in Nature Communications 2 years ago. And the study has shown that the threshold for APRI and FIPFO should be much lower than currently recommended. So this was the first study. So we used this data for this current study. And first thing that we have done is that across the participants of this Hepsanet group, so all the PI principal investigators of each African cohort, we contacted them and we gave a questionnaire assessing out of the markers potentially useful to indicate eligibility, such as age, sex, ALT, AST, gamma GTP, alkaline phosphatase, bilirubin, albumin, and so on, which markers can be available at different level of healthcare facilities. And we refer to the WHO hepatitis B and hepatitis C testing guidelines in 2017. And we identified that there are five different levels of healthcare. The lowest one, which we called tier zero, is a community setting or outreach setting. And then there's tier one, which is a health center, which is often organized by non-medical personnel, I mean nurses or midwives, but not medical doctors. And there's no formal laboratory equipment, but we can still conduct rapid diagnostic tests. And tier two is a district hospital where we can start have doctor and a small laboratory facility. Tier three is a provincial hospital, and tier four is national hospital or university hospital. So at each different level of this healthcare pyramid, which of these markers can be reliably evaluated. And not only those biological markers such as platelet or ALT or AST, but we also asked whether a clinical diagnosis of jaundice is feasible, or ascites is feasible, or family history of liver cancer or cirrhosis can be accurately estimated. And then, so we sent this questionnaire, and we got the table where we can know at which from which level of healthcare facilities we can evaluate this parameter. And by looking at this table, we notice that, for example, viral load HBDNA testing can be only done at tier four, which is national hospital levels. And below this level, only a few of centers reply that they can reliably conduct this. And it was same for FibroScan or liver biopsy. So it means that applicability of the EASL criteria or APASL criteria are really limited to national hospital levels. Whilst what was interesting is that even district hospital level, we can reliably measure platelet counts, LTST, and so on. So basic full blood count testing and also biochemistry test can be performed in this setting. And that allow us to identify a set of parameters that are available at different levels of healthcare facilities and allow to identify a set of variables which can best identify those who are eligible according to the gold standard test, such as viral load and FibroScan, according to EASL criteria. And so once we identify those variables, we divided Hepsanet data set that has been used in previous study, as I mentioned earlier. And we divided them into two groups, validation data set and the development data set. And using the development data set, we try to identify the best combination of markers available at each of the specific different level of healthcare facilities. And then we tested what is the sensitivity and specificity of these algorithms developed by the development data set using the validation data set. So that's what we did. And you asked, second question was about whether this score has been validated to use clinically to define treatment eligibility in Sub-Saharan Africa. But this has been just recently published. So it's still a recommendation from research level, but we hope that you know this will be further validated in different cohort and eventually used as part of the local guidelines, national guidelines in these countries. This is something which we hope that can be happened in future.
Yeah, definitely. I think it simplifies the treatment eligibility a lot, and especially in resource-strapped countries. But Dr. Shimakawa, I don't mind me asking, because you mentioned that you know, this was the treatment eligibility was based on the ESO guidelines. But actually, the ESO guidelines, as you mentioned, they do take into account the viral load and the FibroScan, right? So I guess the patients that you derived the score from and the patients that were validated in, they were probably patients who were treated in a tier 3 or 4 hospital with these facilities. Would that be correct?
Yeah, so thank you for this question. So first, why we chose ESO criteria rather than American or APASL criteria or WHO? First, we know that ESO and APASL and ASL guidelines are quite similar. And of course, it's not entirely the same, but there's a small difference, but it's quite similar. And we have done quite many different analyses in the Gambia, in Senegal, Burkina Faso, and so on, looking at the proportion who meet each of these different guidelines recommended by the professional liver societies. And we found that the proportion who are eligible are quite similar between these three guidelines. And we have used ESO because this is one of the guidelines that have been often applied in hepatologists in Sub-Saharan Africa. And for the WHO guideline, it's quite different from ESO or other guidelines. And we found that, and also WHO, and we found that proportion who meet WHO guidelines is often quite low. And so we did not refer to WHO guideline. We rather refer to ESO guidelines, which is quite similar to ASL and APASL guidelines. And for your second question was, what was your second question?
No problem. My question was because you know many of these patients, their treatment eligibility is determined based on the ESO guidelines. So therefore, most of them would have gotten some form of viral load or biopsy. So then, therefore, is it true or would it then be the assumption is that most of them would have been in tier 3 or 4 hospitals and therefore could the population be biased in a certain way, like perhaps patients with more access to better healthcare facilities? Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much. So so it's true that, you know, for this data, of course, this is done as a within a research context or within university hospital or national hospital context. So that's why all these participants had at least FibroScan and viral load, which allowed us to classify first who is either guidelines eligible or no. And so those are the people who had this formal evaluation. But then, in terms of the selection bias of the population, so it means that if we recruit participants only at the national health center, national hospital levels, then obviously they tend to be more serious liver disease compared to general hepatitis B population. So that's why we did subgroup analysis, because some of the studies that participated in HepSanet came from hospital-based study. So patients were recruited at tertiary care hospital or secondary care hospital, whilst there are also studies that recruited participants through community-based screening, such as the one from the Senegal or in the Gambia. So those studies first conducted hepatitis B surface antigen screening in community context to identify a hepatitis B carrier, and then invited them to hospital to have linkage to care and full liver assessment. So in terms of the severity of liver disease, for those study should represent more or less general population who have hepatitis B. And we have done sensitivity analysis, subgroup analysis by considering this aspect. And I think whether people are recruited in the community screening context hospital-based setting, we did not really observe a difference in terms of the performance of these scores.
Wow, okay, that's a really good answer, and that really clears up some of the, I guess, questions that I had when reading the study. The other thing, I guess, I mean, HepSinet seems like quite, mainly it's AST, ALT, and platelet from what I understand. And okay, maybe you could first explain how this could be applied clinically, and are there any plans to kind of extend this study to validate this in other cohorts?
Yeah, so I think you know, now people talk a lot about treat all people who are either hepatitis, yes, B surface antigen positive alone, or hepatitis B surface antigen positive and HBDNA positive. And of course, you know, where there's no access to any of these tests, I think this will be the only way for people to have access to antiviral therapy. But obviously, the current antiviral therapy is not perfect because most of the time, this requires lifelong therapy. And I think as a physician, it's difficult to say to the patient that, oh, you carry this hepatitis B, but because here we don't have access to any of the tests which allow us to know how likely you may develop liver disease in future or not. And therefore, it's safer that you take this oral medicine for the rest of your life. And also another problem is that many of the countries, hepatitis B care is not subsidized by the government, and people are not covered by any type of insurance. So it means that many of the people have to engage with payment out of the pocket, which is very heavy burden, you know, financially heavy burden. So that's why I think we should, this is what I think, but I think we should, you know, there are two extremes. One is, you know, to conduct gold standard tests such as FibroScan, viral load, and so on. Another is treat everyone who are positive for hepatitis B surface antigen. But I think in reality, what we should do is something in between, because there are tests that can be still implemented in decentralized context, you know, such as ALT, AST, and platelet count. And of course, HepSinet score is not perfect to discriminate those who are eligible and not eligible, but 80%, 77% sensitivity, which is not perfect, but still it's useful to stratify the risk. So I think we should use those tests and we can identify people who can benefit of treatment, because previously many of people were denied to have access to treatment because they do not have access to viral load. But even if they do not have access to viral load, using these tests which are available, we can assess treatment eligibility, and this is something this paper can suggest, you know, to improve the care of people living with hepatitis B. And for HepSinet group, as a group, I cannot really talk on behalf of the whole group because I'm not the coordinator of this big consortium, but I think, you know, there are many partners within it, and they have many different interesting ideas. And I think currently they are really willing to develop a real cohort study of chronic hepatitis B infection in African context. As you know, having a longitudinal cohort study is quite labor intensive, and it costs a lot as well. And in Asian countries, you know, a lot of nicely developed cohort have answered many of different important clinical questions, while in Sub-Saharan Africa, it has not been the case. So that's why so far, the study that have been published out of the HepSanet group has been always cross-sectional, but in future, the group is intended to conduct a longitudinal study to answer better this kind of question.
That's a really great point, actually. I think you made a really great point on the move towards treating all patients and why this is not possible in the African context. So, and also, I think you made a really convincing case for using the HepSanet score. And we really look forward to the future interesting studies or developments that the HepSanet may come up with. So thanks a lot for your time, Dr. Shimakawa. And do you have any final words for our listeners?
Yeah, thank you very much, Dr. Teng, for giving this great opportunity. And as you know, hepatitis B, particularly in a high in some of the country have a high prevalence, but still it has been quite neglected compared to other infectious diseases, such as HIV, TB, and malaria. And so I think now it's really the time that we should, not neglect those problems. And I think Asian countries have, have quite a good success in terms of the control of hepatitis. So I think it's great if there is more collaboration between Asia and Africa, and so that we can really achieve elimination goals advocated by the WHO. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Dr. Shimakawa, and thanks everyone else for listening to this episode of the Liver Foundation podcast. We hope to see you again the next time. Thank you.
We have come to the end of the episode. Thank you for joining us and stay tuned for more captivating discussions.